Eno Hall, please be seated.
Okay, so before we get to Mr. Walsh's case, just a couple of matters arising over the luncheon break, and we've had a look at the diagrams for Manaherikia, and I think the proposal was from you, Mr. Moore, to put those, to admit those by consent, as an exhibit, I guess, by consent, without any witness speaking to them. They're pretty straightforward but critical. We're happy to do that if nobody else has any objection to admit the two diagrams provided by ORUG by consent. So we'll put them through ORUG. So that's exhibit ORUG. What number are we up to? We did. Okay. None yet for ORUG? Okay, good.
I suspect the exhibits were possibly in the name of the individual submitters.
Yep.
I have in mind those other maps.
All right, so exhibit ORUG, a document entitled Figure 1, exhibit ORUG 1, a document entitled Figure 1, Manaherikia Catchment Gold Sim, spelled GOLDSIM, model logic diagram, and exhibit ORUG 2, a plan entitled Manaherikia Overview Map, dated August 2015. Now, the second issue which has arisen over the luncheon break is having a look at the sensitivity analysis, which was presented over the weekend. We knew that the sensitivity analysis was going to come in, but this document would not pass the court's requirements as being an attachment to a JWS for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's unsigned. Secondly, we are unaware of who all the participating witnesses are. Some initials are mentioned at paragraph 1, which is Dougal McTavish, and paragraph 3 with the initials noted there. We don't know whether they are all the witnesses that needed to participate or only some of the witnesses that needed to participate. Three, if it is hoped that this would pass the standard for evidence, it does not, inasmuch as there is no explanation given for a new methodology which is being proposed in this document. While we're quite content for joint witness statements to become evidence without the need to provide a supporting brief, there are some minimum requirements for that, and that is that the joint witness statement explain adequately but succinctly what are the facts being relied on and any assumptions made, and it certainly notes the assumptions at least, but does not in any sense take the court through what are the proposed methodology changes. Now, one of the things that is of concern, but it may be of absolutely no moment, we don't know because the witnesses aren't, or participants aren't telling us, is that there seems to be a move back to the averaging, an average hourly rate for take data as a methodology. Now, there may be nothing in that, there may be something in that, but given that most of this hearing has been caught up with the use of averaging data, the use of the word average, it may be in a different sense, in a different meaning, but it needed to have been explained. Now, I must make this really clear. Just because the experts say it is so does not mean that the court will adopt it. You've got to take us over the line in terms of an adequate standard of evidence, and this is not it. And I think that's one of the prevailing concerns about the conferencing process to date. Understand that it's in development, you know, that what is being proposed or reviewed is in development, but there has to be an explanation by witnesses as to what they are doing and why, so that people and communities within Otago can understand the development of the plan change, at least in this key respect. and not be, in other words, information has to be clearly communicated and be available for the audience. That actually includes your members of your bench. So this doesn't come anywhere near the standard that we would have expected for a joint witness statement. Now, it could be that they've run out of time, but they need to do something about it. And if we don't, if you can't get us over the line, what will happen is that I will simply adjourn the hearing and take a big break to get the witnesses back in the room and, you know, working up a document with an adequate explanation. All right? So I'm not going to say anything more about that. We'll take a break, actually, after this week. So we won't go into next week. We will hear your case, Mr. Walsh, and we will also hear the Territorial Authorities case. Indicate that the court hasn't read all of the evidence from the Territorial Authorities, the latest briefs. The direction was 10 pages. They've all come in at 40 pages with numerous appendices, which, again, the expectation is the court has read. Well, it hasn't. Sitting really long hours and doesn't have time to be reading, or hasn't made time to be reading well in excess of what the direction was. So it may well be for the supplementary evidence, which has been, and I'm looking at you, Mr. Page, because you can tell Ms. Irving, your witnesses may have to read. All right? So I don't know how you're going to take that back, but if somebody could take that back and communicate that back to the witnesses.
I wonder whether Ms. Mallett just may address you on the...
Sorry, just one point of clarification, Your Honour. The signatures are at the back document. I appreciate your comments around the content and the standard of the document, and we'll report back to the witnesses on that, but I just wanted to note that...
The signatures are at the back, so we've got some people happy with the mathematical formula. Dougal McTavish wasn't there anyway because he was in front of the court. Yeah, what does that mean, even that you've got some people happy with a mathematical formula? What about the people who are not noted in here that have signed this document?
Yes, yeah. And it was a product of the timing and the witnesses wanting to meet the reporting date of Friday, so we can go back to the witnesses and get them to work further on that and
so
provide some further
if
explanation.
You know that this is not going to pass muster, it's not going to take you over the line, you should be asking for...
Yes.
Yeah, because... I think that's what Commissioner Bunting's hesitation was with, you know, the couple from, I think, Balquhidder Station. I think he'd seen the word average. And Mr. Moore and I were talking about maximums. We could be talking about the same thing. We don't now know, and now there's actually a large level of uncertainty. And it may be that folk think that I rubber stamp things. That I didn't think that was my reputation, but it's not. So you've got to get us over the line, okay?
Yes,
all right, thank you. So, Mr. Welch, now we are in your hands. Yeah.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honour and Commissioners. It's good to be back in the South.
Yeah.
You should have before you a copy of my legal submissions.
Need it. Very good. Thank you.
And in due course, Your Honour, I'll, through Madam Registrar, produce two summary statements, one for Mr. Mitchell and one for Ms. Stiles.
Yep.
The third witness, Ms. Foran, will just simply read her one-page summary that's included in her evidence in chief, if that's convenient to the court when we get to that stage. So, ma'am, these submissions are made on behalf of Trustpower, who opposes aspects of Plan Change 7 to the regional plan as notified. And, Mum, throughout, I do note when I'm talking, or I try to note when I'm talking about as notified, because, as you've just pointed out, parties don't know if we've got you over the court over the line on certain aspects in the joint witness statement.
Yep.
So I've approached it on both bases, Mum, which does extend the submission somewhat, but I thought that was necessary. Yep. Having said that, since notification and throughout this hearing, the parties' positions and their relief sought have evolved, most notably the Otago Regional Council, and Trustpower's current position is summarised below. Due to the nature of Trustpower's takes, deem permit replacement applications by Trustpower and under Plan Change 7 as notified would be non-complying activities due to the inability to meet the controlled activity conditions and to comply with the Schedule 10A4, which is geared towards irrigation activities. They would also be subject to the directive framework requiring 6-year maximum consent duration. Trustpower's submission and evidence, therefore, sought amendments to Plan Change 7 to provide separately for hydroelectric generation activities at the objective, policy and rule level, including changes to the application of the schedule. Recently, various changes have been recommended as a result of conferencing between the experts, including Trustpower's two experts, culminating in the version of PC7 attached as the 7 May joint witness statement version. Broadly, while the version attached to the 7 May JWS deals with Trustpower's concerns in a different manner than sought in Trustpower's submission and evidence, with one exception, Trustpower considers that the provisions recommended in the 7 May JWS constitutes a workable and appropriate framework for hydro. In particular, and I've got in particular, but most importantly, ma'am, Trustpower supports the proposed amendments to the Restricted Discretionary Activity Rule 10A31A1, sounding like a tax code, which provides a pathway for hydro water data to be assessed and take limits set on a case-by-case basis, as opposed to under the schedule, which does not, in my submission, appropriately deal with hydro takes. The exception I referred to earlier, which has not been the subject of expert conferencing, is the relief sought by Trustpower that for hydro, PC7 provide a realistic pathway for longer consent durations than the 6-year maximum, i.e. longer term consents for hydro should be able to be assessed in my submission on their merits. Ms Stiles has proposed and Trustpower will be seeking changes to the PC7 objective policies and rules to provide a framework for hydro operators to seek that longer term consent as a discretionary activity. And, Mama, I've included in Annexure A, and Ms Stiles will produce this in her summary, but I thought, given she's at the end of the presentation, I should attach it at the beginning, a set of provisions which capture those changes from the joint witness statement, the 7 May version in red, with the additional changes that Trustpower still seeks. They're not new changes, they're the The continuation of the relief sought, and that's in response to the issue around duration, which, as I say, wasn't focused on, conferenced on.
Just to clarify then, the red is what was agreed?
The red is the joint witness statement.
Yes.
And Trustpower experts have agreed to that. And the blue is the additional points of relief that Trustpower still maintains and still seeks, Commissioner. And Ms Stiles will be able to take you through that, Your Honour, but I just thought it was useful to provide it now. Trustpower has, for each of its four races, sought an expiry date in those applications of May 2038, which is approximately 17 years, and as I've discussed with the court previously, that's to align with the hydro of the Waipori scheme. And 1.4, in summary, Trustpower considers that without the amendments proposed by Ms Stiles, PC7 is an inappropriate, albeit interim, planning framework. It treats takes for hydro the same as all other takes, and in so doing, fails to give effect to the applicable higher order RMA planning documents with respect to renewable electricity generation, including the MPS for renewable electricity generation, the MPS for freshwater management, and the operative in part regional policy statement. In terms of a roadmap, the scope of these submissions, I intend to introduce the three witnesses for Trustpower, summarise how PC7 impacts Trustpower, briefly, very briefly, comment upon the statutory framework, outline Trustpower's position on PC7 and the relief it is seeking, and address certain other legal issues in PRACI form, Mum. As the court will be aware, there's three witnesses being called by Trustpower. The first, Ms Nicola Foran, is employed by Trustpower as a lead environmental advisor, and Ms Foran will provide evidence regarding Trustpower, its assets in Otago, and PC7's impacts with respect to Trustpower's operations. And I'm calling Ms Foran as a company witness, Mum. Mr Paul Mitchell is a hydrologist with more than three decades' experience, with extensive experience in water projects for hydro and irrigation purposes. Mr Mitchell addresses the hydrological context of Trustpower's Otago water races and hydro activities and PC7's impact on Trustpower's existing and future assets slash activities. Last but not least, Ms Stephanie Stiles, a senior planner at Boffa Miskell, will address the PC7 planning framework with a focus on the impacts on Trustpower's Otago operations. And with that in mind, in section two, I address those very matters. In the Otago region, Trustpower owns and operates two hydroelectric power schemes, the Waipori HEPS, which includes the smaller deep stream hydroelectric power scheme, and the Pairoa-Patiaroa HEPS, located further north in the Maniatoto. Trustpower's hydroelectric assets in Otago produce approximately 278 gigawatt hours, enough energy to supply the average household of 35,000 households, or approximately 40% households in the region. Just to try and provide that generation in some sort of context that we can all relate to. The deemed permits held by Trustpower relate to the Waipori HEPS only. Trustpower holds, and I'm sorry for being imprecise, but it's the very nature of these deemed permits. They're very difficult to ascertain what they relate to and how many are actually held by Trustpower, but by best estimates, Trustpower holds approximately 100 deemed permits, but has only filed replacement consent applications for 7 deemed permits, which are associated with its Beaumont, Black Rock, Shepherds and Crystal water races. And, Mum, I don't intend throughout to take you to the footnotes, which I use extensively to try and reduce the length of the submissions, but I thought I should just note that 3 of those, so not Beaumont, were filed prior to the notification of Plan Change 7, and they are discretionary activities under Section 88A. And the 4th, Beaumont, was filed in March of this year, and that is a non-complying activity when measured against or assessed against the plan change as notified. Trustpower is seeking up to 17-year consent durations for all of those deemed permit replacement consents, which, as I say, will align with the expiry dates of Waipori and Deep Stream. The remaining approximately 90 deemed permits will finally expire in October of this year, and this has been communicated to the ORC, and they will be allowed to just expire. This will result in a significant reduction in the paper allocation currently held by Trustpower but not relied upon. PC7 impacts Trustpower with respect to both its replacement of deemed permits and applications for new consents. Turning first to the deemed permits, PC7 includes the directive and restrictive standalone framework for reconsenting of deemed permits. Unless amendments to the notified version of PC7 are adopted, for example, the RDA rule in the version of the JWS, data analysis and limit setting methodology and requirements in the controlled activity rule, 10A31, mean that Trustpower faces either a controlled activity consenting pathway that would notably reduce Trustpower's total authorised takes compared to the current consented takes, or a non-complying pathway. The former would impact on generation capacity and result in inefficient use of resources, including existing infrastructure resources, and the latter involves material consenting risks. In addition, Plan Change 7 includes a very directive or set of provisions requiring short replacement permit durations. There appears to be consensus that because the policy 10A23 requires avoiding granting consent for more than 6 years, it is implausible, if not impossible, to conceive how any application for a consent term of more than 6 years could pass the second threshold of 104D. Even if an application passed the only plausible 104DA gateway relating to effects, it would at best be a significant challenge to gain consent in the face of the substantive 104.1b Roman 6 analysis requiring regard to be had to the regional plan objectives and policies, of which the only PC 7 objective and policy 10A23 will be relevant is the issue of duration. Granting a consent of more than 6 years would require a decision maker to simply dispense with the only applicable policy, one which requires them to avoid granting consents for no more than 6 years. There are no specific provisions for hydro. Mr. De Palsmaker conceded in response to questions that it was possible that no consent for more than 6 years' duration will be granted under the PC7 framework. Turning to new applications, the PC7 policy framework relating to duration for new consent applications in 10A22 will be the only policy relating to duration applying to new resource consent applications by Trustpower to take and or use water. And policy 10A22 is drafted in similar directive terms. And Mum, I don't really see a big difference between avoid granting and only grant. Still not clear to me why there's a different
the
use of language.
Yeah, and it wasn't clear to me either, and I don't think we got a satisfactory answer. But anyway, apparently only still mean avoid, only grant and avoid were meant to indicate the same. So
same thing, yeah. And that's my submission, Mum. They're intended to achieve the same result, thereby effectively limiting consent duration to 6 years. And I'll come later on, Mum, to some of the Trustpower applications that are already being caught by that policy direction in respect of maintenance works at the Beaumont Water Race and an enhancement at Deep Stream. The legal framework applying to PC7 is largely well settled and I'd say largely uncontested between the parties. And I'll only focus on the key issues for Trustpower, if I may, Mum. Part two, renewable electricity generation is a key aspect of sustainable management purpose of Section 5. Electricity enables people and communities to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being and for their health and safety. And I have gone back to the case, I think it's 2005, by His Honour Judge Whiting in the Awhitu Wind Farm up in Auckland, where His Honour held that electricity is a vital resource for New Zealand. There can be no sustainable management of natural and physical resources without energy, of which electricity is a major component. That's in footnote 15, Mum. In addition, Section 7J explicitly requires all persons exercising functions and powers under the RMA to have particular regard to the benefits to be derived from the use and the development of renewable energy. Section 7B, relating to the efficient use and development of natural and physical resources, and 7I, the effects of climate change, are also key. So moving on to the two relevant MPSs, at least as far as trust power is concerned, ma'am. Under Section 67.3A, the water plan must give effect to any national policy statement. And I address those two that are most relevant to Trustpower's PC7 concerns. Turning first to the MPS REG, this is addressed, as you'll be aware, in detail by Ms. Stiles. The matters of national significance to which the MPS REG applies are the need to develop, operate, maintain and upgrade renewable generation activities throughout New Zealand and the benefits of renewable electricity generation. Now, as Mr. Moore set out all the 7 weeks ago, ma'am, or back in March, the MPS REG has just a single objective, and I don't intend to read the quotes, with your leave, ma'am. Of particular relevance to PC7, the MPS REG explicitly recognises the following. The first is the contribution of renewable electricity generation, regardless of scale. And B, policy BA, the maintenance and generation output of existing renewable electricity activities can require protection of the assets, operational capacity, and continued availability of renewable energy resource, and in this case, that is access to the water. And as the Environment Court, in another case concerning the relevance of the REG in the regional planning context, this is the Carter Holt decision that Mr. Moore referred to. Mum, I might just read this one if I may. The protection of assets, operational capacity and continued availability of the existing renewable energy resource is required as acknowledgement of the fact that even minor reductions in the generation output of existing renewable electricity generation activities can cumulatively have significant adverse effects on national, regional and local renewable electricity generation output. And there needs to be the incorporation of provisions for renewable electricity generation activities into regional policy statements, regional plans and district plans to include objectives, policies and methods to provide for new and existing hydro, wind and geothermal. Including in the context of the MPS REG, I submit it surprising that PC7, as notified, did not contain a single provision or acknowledgement relating to renewable electricity generation. This is despite the reasons in the Minister's direction referring PC7 to the Environment Court, stating that PC7 is a matter of national significance because, among other things, there is a relationship between the matter in the MPS renewable electricity generation, given that Trustpower, Contact Energy and Pioneer Energy hold either deemed permits or other water permits in relation to renewable energy generation. Secondly, ORC provided no substantive analysis addressing PC7's application to hydro, including the cost benefits associated with PC7's application to hydro activities. The Section 32 evaluation on the MPS REG has a paucity of analysis and does not specifically refer to any particular REG provision. Thirdly, despite the lack of analysis, PC7 actively and intentionally discourages investment in hydro infrastructure and other water infrastructure in Otago. Mr. De Palsmaker's unapologetically and repeated points to such discouragement as one of the key aims and outcomes of PC7, and Mr. Moore confirms this in his submissions. Intentionally seeking to put water-related investment on hold for years is extraordinary, given the nature and the scale of the resulting cost to industry and the fact that, at least in respect of hydro, such costs are directly contrary to the government's stated policy goals and national direction in the form of the MPS REG. the government's national climate change goals, which now include a target of 100% renewable electricity by 2030, require investment certainty for renewable electricity generators, and therefore regional planning frameworks need to appropriately provide for the substantial commitments that renewable electricity generation investment requires, including appropriate consenting pathways and appropriate consent terms. Mum, I'm going to now address you on the issue around the MPSREG and the preamble, the reference to that that was put to, I think, mainly Mr. Ensor. I submit that the MPSREG is relevant with respect to Plan Change 7, and that Plan Change 7 must give effect to the MPSREG. Now, the preamble includes the following. This national policy statement does not apply to the allocation and prioritisation of freshwater, as these are matters for regional councils to address in a catchment or regional context and may be the subject of development of national guidance in the future. Now, at various stages before the hearing and before and or during the hearing, both Mr. De Pelsmaker and Mr. Moore have acknowledged the required requirements for PC7 to give effect to the REG. Mr. Pelsmaker refers to the REG preamble in his statements of evidence, where he offers his view that the MPSREG is relevant to Plan Change 7 and that Plan Change 7 must give effect to the MPSREG. Mr. Moore also refers to the preamble in his opening legal submissions, but also clearly acknowledges that PC7 must be given effect to the MPSREG. Mr. Moore acknowledges in Carter Holt Harvey and Waikato Regional Council, and that was that very long case, Mom, dealing with water allocation of the Waikato River, the Variation 1, I think it is. The Environment Court confirmed that the MPSREG preamble represents no barrier to the MPSREG's application in the context of freshwater regional plan making, including in respect of allocation and prioritisation of water. And I set out a quote, Mum, which I won't take you through, but and I've highlighted or bolded the relevant parts in paragraph 59, where His Honour Judge Whiting makes that point, and also 63 that wasn't submitted in Mr. Moore's opening submissions, that the provisions of the MPSREG are particularly relevant to the main issue between electricity generators and those seeking water for agricultural purposes. Counsel for the Minister agrees that the MPSREG is relevant to Plan Change 7 and that Plan Change 7 must be given effect to, which is consistent with the Minister's own views as recorded above. The relevance and application of the MPSREG to PC7 is also generally supported by the MPSREG implementation guide documentations. And I don't believe that that at all is in the common bundle, Mum. That's probably an oversight on my part, but I do have copies if that is useful. But I do set out the quote there, and I may just take you through that, Mum, parts of that, where the implementation guide notes that tensions may still arise, for example, between REG activities and activities that are subject of other national policy statements, or between REG activities and matters requiring consideration under Part 2. However, in considering and addressing these tensions, decision makers need to recognise the benefits of REG are no longer up for debate, and ensure those activities are explicitly acknowledged in RMA assessments undertaken. And then, Mum, I set out in some detail the other relevant points for in that implementation guideline.
We'll just read them to ourselves and come back to you.
Thank you.
year this implementation guideline was came published? Out? Was it after the MPS reg?
Yes, ma'am. I'll just get a copy.
Thank you.
Well, it's unhelpfully undated. It's copyrighted in, it's November 2011, or published, I should say, ma'am, on November 2011. So, yes, it would be after the notification of the MPS reg.
So just remind me what the date of the MPS reg becoming operative was. Sorry?
This is why they invented juniors.
Oh, I think somebody might be trying to help you there.
April, 14th of April 2011.
Okay, so while you've got that implementation guide in your hand, perhaps you could look in possibly in the front. Does it have a disclaimer?
No, I don't believe it does, from what I can see, ma'am. It records how it may be cited and who it was prepared by and who that was for. I would have to come back,
sure.
Commissioner.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking the question is that I did sit on a case to do with the NZCPS where the implementation guide was referred to us, but when you went back and had a look, you... we were led to observe that the disclaimer it was something that we needed to consider as well as what was in the implementation
right.
guide and when it had been prepared.
All I can say at the moment is I didn't identify a disclaimer of that sort when I was preparing these submissions, but I can, at the afternoon tea adjournment, review that and bring it to your attention, but I can't see it at the moment, ma'am.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, we're at your paragraph 3.14.
Yes, thank you. Notwithstanding my submission that the MPS REG preamble represents no barrier to the MPS's application to Plan Change 7, I submit that Plan Change 7 only relates to the allocation and prioritisation of freshwater, and that's the language of the MPS preamble, in the sense that it provides a framework for resource consent applications relating to fresh water. PC7 is not informed by a catchment or regional-wide allocation prioritisation exercise as envisaged under the MPS REG preamble and as provided for under the MPS FM 2020. And, Mum, that's also evident by the lack of parties who are not involved in this process, for example.
Oh, I don't have a particular difficulty with that. I was just trying to figure out what the first sentence, the second sentence in paragraph 14.3.14 meant. So it only relates to the allocation and prioritisation of freshwater. And that's in some preamble.
In the MPS REG preamble, yes. So I've just used that language that at most, ma'am, if one were to argue that PC7 is an allocation plan change, then at most in my submission it could only be an allocation plan change in the sense that it provides a framework for rolling over resource consents.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's all.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying now.
Thank you. So I was in the final sentence, ma'am, in 314. To the contrary, it's the future allocation prioritisation exercise that ORC and others are keen to ensure is not compromised by Plan Change 7. Even if I'm wrong on that point, and I don't believe I am, but if I were, and the court disagrees with me, then and the court found that the REG was not to apply to Plan Change 7, the RPS provides, well, the RPS gives effect to the REG and contains strong objectives and policies which PC7 must give effect to. So we get there one way or t'other. On the basis that the MPS reg does apply, I submit that Plan Change 7, as notified, plainly does not give effect to it. This is almost self-evident. PC7 provided no recognition or differentiation for hydro, nor does the wider water plan contain renewable electricity generation provisions giving effect to the REG, other than those limited provisions that you heard about in March, ma'am, relating to the Waitaki catchment. Without the changes recommended by Ms. Stiles, including as recommended in the JWS of 7 May, PC7 does not provide for the protection of assets, operational capacity and continued availability of renewable energy resources as required by Policy BA and is directly counter to Policy BB's confirmation that even minor reductions in the generation output can cumulatively have significant adverse effects. It fails to recognise the benefits of renewable electricity generation, which is a matter of national significance under the REG. Mr. De Pelsmaker briefly addressed the REG in his evidence in chief, concluding at paragraph 180, "Overall, I consider objective 10A11 to be appropriate in light of the requirement to give effect to the NPS REG, too many acronyms, I'm sorry, ma'am, as it establishes an interim framework for A, allocating existing hydro generation activities to continue." Mr. De Pulsemaker is correct that PC7 does provide a framework for the consideration of expiring consents, but simply because PC7 applies to hydro does not give effect to the NPS REG. The fact is, as notified, PC7 framework for the consideration of hydro applications is the same framework that applies to all other activities, including purely consumptive takes. Mr. De Pelsmaker's argument, which appears to be shared through questioning by counsel for Fish and Game, is tantamount to saying that any framework that provides for hydro as anything but a prohibited activity gives effect to the NPS REG. The fact that the existing water plan does not give effect to the NPS REG does not serve as a basis for justifying PC7's failure to do the same. So, ma'am, I'm now going to step into the second NPS, and that's obviously freshwater management. And that's been addressed in detail by a range of parties, and I simply want to outline several discrete matters relevant to Trustpower. And the first is in respect of the overarching objective. And my submission is electricity generation is a Tier 2 and a Tier 3 priority. And I set out there the single objective in 321. And I note in respect of the second tier priority, while drinking water is expressly explicitly identified as an example of a use provided for the health needs of people, I submit that electricity generation also comes within the second tier of the hierarchy of priorities identified in the NPSFM objective, in addition to the third tier. Electricity is clearly required for people's health. And again, in footnote 48, ma'am, I've delved back to the Awhitu decision, where, as Honour noted, electricity is a vital resource for New Zealand. There can be no sustainable management of natural and physical resources without energy, of which electricity is a major component. Now, this interpretation, or my interpretation, that electricity generation as a Tier 2 matter is explicitly confirmed in the NPSCFM Section 32 analysis. And that, Mum, the relevant section of that is Trustpower Exhibit 1. I've put an excerpt of that to one of the witnesses.
Just pause there a second.
Yes, ma'am.
I recall you doing that, but the witness didn't accept that proposition, did she? No, I think it's she too, and I'd completely forgotten which witness you put your question to. But I remember you asking a question on exactly that point, and they didn't accept it. Maybe it was Mr. Enzel.
I think I had a go with quite a few of them.
okay.
But I've referenced Mr. De Palsmaker because the exchange with him I actually can recall, and I've gone back into the transcript. So in 23, I put the excerpt of the Section 32, or the quote from the Section 32 assessment, to him and questioned whether he accepted that electricity was Tier 2. Mm. And his answer was he acknowledged on that basis that hydro was a second and third tier order priority. Okay. So I'm not sure if Mr. Palsmaker considered that or he just accepted it on that basis of the Section 32. It wasn't a ringing endorsement, but Ms. Stiles does proffer her opinion that it is a Tier 2 matter.
Okay, thank you.
And, Mum, as you've made the point to a number of the parties, so what in the end, but it's not the... Well, you haven't put it so succinctly, but it doesn't. Being Tier 2 or Tier 3 doesn't mean you trump, obviously, the Tier 1 overarching objective. Two policies that haven't really had much attention, or they haven't had any attention through Plan Change 7 and during the course of this hearing. The first one is Policy 4, and that's freshwater is managed as part of New Zealand's integrated response to climate change. Now, hydro contributes significantly to the nation's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and the government's goal to achieve 100% electricity generation by 2030. And I've just again quoted from that same exhibit, Mum, in 326. If I may take that as read.
All right, just to give this a second.
Thank you, Mum. Mr. De Palsmaker confirmed in response to questions that Plan Change 7 adopts the approach of simply kicking the climate change can down the road to the future land and water regional plan. And, Mum, if I can just depart from the written submissions, it's not clear to me how the regional council, or on what basis, I should say, the regional council has picked and choose which of the objectives it seeks to bring through from the freshwater NPS into Plan Change 7, beyond those that which it can give effect to as reasonably practicable. And some of those, 4 and 15, seem to me at least to be eminently suitable to giving effect to those as far as practical, rather than simply ignoring them and waiting for a future plan to pick them up. So that's policy 4. The other companion policy, I suppose, is policy 15, and that's communities are enabled to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being in a way that's consistent with this NPS. Policy 15 is an enabling provision intending to achieve the third order or third priority of the NPSCFM objective. It clearly extends in my submission to recognising and providing for hydro, which is a key contributor to social, economic and cultural well-being. In conclusion, in respect of those two MPSs, Mr. De Palsmaker states in his evidence that Plan Change 7 gives effect to the MPS-FM to the extent it can, but during cross-examination conceded that BC7, at least as notified, does not deal with all policies which it could give effect to currently. For example, it does not give effect to policies of 4 and 15. And, Mum, in footnote 58, I think things have moved on since I've last been before you. You had asked all Council to confirm in respect to those provisions that Mr. Moore addressed you on.
Mm.
I simply note that in footnote 58, I agree with Mr. Moore and his analysis. And I've set out an additional case by His Honour Judge Kirkpatrick in Friends of Nelson Haven in Tasman Bay, where His Honour notes that there is nothing in the RMA that prevents the processing of changes to regional policy statements and plans while the Section 55 duty has been undertaken. It's just an additional authority for Mr. Moore's conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
While the MPS-FM Clause 411 requires ORC to give effect to the MPS-FM as soon as reasonably practicable, it is entirely practicable to give effect to policies 4 and 15 and others now through the PC7 process through the relief along the lines sought by Trustpower. In circumstances where freshwater national direction itself has specific provisions recognising and providing for hydro within the Te Mana Otiwai framework, it is entirely appropriate for PC7 to include recognition for hydro. The changes Trustpower is seeking to PC7 is not just about giving effect to the MPS REG. They are also about giving effect to the MPS FM itself. Trustpower is not seeking to give effect to the MPS REG at the expense of the freshwater management MPS. The changes sought are consistent within both documents. There is no, in my submission, there is no inherent conflict between the two. And the taking and use of water for hydro can be undertaken in a manner that is consistent with Te Mana Otiwai and the MPS's hierarchy of priorities. And in support of that proposition, Ma'am, I also quote from the regulatory impact statement, which informed the development of the MPS-FM. And set that out at 333.
No, I don't remember. Is that an exhibit or in the common bundle?
It's in neither, ma'am.
Oh, okay, well, there you go.
So I have some homework to provide you.
Pardon?
I have it here, but I'll have to provide it, ma'am.
Oh, yeah. No, then you might need to. Yeah, you will need to.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually specifically interested. I'm interested in everything, but I'm interested in that last sentence, no inherent conflict. You know, is there a conflict? Answer, no. Answer, why not? Why don't you think there's any inconsistency or conflict between the two MPSs for freshwater and electricity?
You're asking me why?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm actually really specifically interested in that. I can't see why they can't stand together, but you tell me why they can. Well, I mean, I think they can. But.
Well, the first point I'd have to make is they have to.
Yeah.
They have to stand together, and it's much like the old Part 2 approach where there's tensions in different directions. Mm. There will be times, for example, in the hydro context, when not providing, say, a residual flow is appropriate and still in accordance with Te Mana Otiwai. Mm. But then there'll be other circumstances where an increase in the residual flow may be entirely appropriate to Te Mana Otiwai. I think those decisions have to be made at the individual case consent application stage. But I don't think the Minister, certainly the documents that I've reviewed, had in mind that the two MPSs cannot be reconciled. Mm.
So even though you might, say, for example, need to increase a residual flow or be subject to a minimum flow, and that might reduce your electricity output.
Yeah.
Then that's what it does.
That's what it does. Mm-hmm. If the greater national directional pull is to increase that residual flow. Now, in other instances, that may not be the case, and the national direction and the national importance of not reducing output may win in that instance. But I don't think the MPS, REG or the FM trump one another. They need to be reconciled, and that's going to be a real challenge in the consent hearings. But I think they must be reconciled, and the outcomes will be different in the individual circumstances.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's my submission anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm at 3:34. While Mr. Moore for ORC is correct that parts of the MPS FM are more directive than parts of the MPS REG, it's not in my submission an either or equation. And I know my client is disappointed to have had one of the early MPSs, which is less directive, but that is what it is. Ma'am, I now turn to the RPS. And under section 67.3c, the water plan must give effect to any regional policy statement. And the RPS contains a suite of now operative provisions strongly reinforcing the importance of renewable electricity generation in Otago and the need for regional plans to provide for this. And that they're set out in detail of Ms. Stiles' evidence, so I won't try to do any pseudo-planning, but I just highlight three policies that have been discussed previously. That's policy 414 that sets out the need to provide for renewable electricity generation activities, including recognising their benefits, recognising the importance of their resource needs, i.e. water, and promoting efficient use of existing facilities. Policy 443 includes the direction to protect the generation output of existing nationally or regionally significant renewable electricity generation activities by a range of measures, including by recognising their functional need, including physical resource supply, e.g. water needs. And 422 relates to climate change and includes a directive regarding the encouragement, or encouraging, I should say, activities that assist to reduce or mitigate the effects of climate change. And hydro and my submission clearly has a role in that regard. And there's also, ma'am, some regional and nationally significant infrastructure provisions that I've left for Ms. Stiles to address you on.
So with that previous discussion that we had in mind, in terms of is there any inconsistency between the two MPSs, answer not case by case, judgment call, depending on the weight of evidence, which direction you move in. Does that hold true, though, when you start to look at the RPS policy 4.4.3 and word protect, because that's actually a very strong direction?
It is.
Yeah.
My friends on my left would say, well, that RPS is getting reviewed as part of the work stream and whether that survives. But at the moment, this is the RPS. I know ORC may deliver to the court the new notified version partway through this hearing, but at the moment, this is the RPS, and so my submissions are based on that. It's very strong language. But I still would say that in certain circumstances, the MPS FM might pull you another direction, notwithstanding that policy direction. Because it may be, I'm not going to submit that these policies or the REG will always trump Te Mana O Te Wai, because I think that would be incorrect to say that. It may do in individual circumstances, it may not. But I think it will inform and has to inform the decision maker the consequence of their decision and how to try and navigate their way between those different tensions.
Okay, and you're submitting that because, in a context where we've got a brand new MPS for freshwater management, which has yet to be fully expressed anywhere, so therefore on a consent-by-consent basis, at least for electricity, we're dealing with the RPS and 4.4.3 in particular, I would have thought. But you will have to go back up to the MPS freshwater management to look at the, on a case-by-case basis, some expression of the MPS there and not through policy. So,
and also I think because of the water plan being such an incomplete coverage, taking out of the PC7 context, you know, that that's a sitter for the King Salmon approach of delving back into part two.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was not thinking about PC7 when I was talking about that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good.
Through these provisions, the RPS gives effect to the MPS REG, at least in part. However, it's common ground that the RPS does not give effect to the MPS FM, and that's no criticism, it's just a matter of timing between the two documents. So I submit it's clear that PC7, as notified, does not give effect to the to the RPS policies with respect to renewable electricity generation. And there's no exemption under Section 67 of not giving effect to the to an RPS. It's not give effect to the must give effect to the RPS unless this is an interim framework of 6+ years. There's no exception. So in summary, for hydro, PC7 as notified is inappropriate and fails to give effect to those higher order instruments. It's essentially a stopgap measure until a fit-for-purpose planning framework can be delivered. But, Mum, I have no confidence as to when that will be fully operative. It will be a matter of years that applicants are subject to PC7. And I submit that consenting of hydro with appropriate consent durations should not be discouraged pending a new land and water regional plan and a new RPS. And, Mum, probably at this point of... put the submission down for a moment and I'll probably come to it in the very next paragraph, but I heard on the transcript a few instances, Mum, where you had suggested perhaps some of the applicants were worried about were wanting a longer term duration in order to deal with the unknowns of the future plan coming through. And I would just say from Trustpower's perspective that's not the case. Trustpower welcomes the to be involved, to influence the contents of the new plan, because currently it doesn't provide for the MPS REG, and it would be great to have a plan that does do that. So the longer consent durations not being sought as some sort of protection from the unknown. I think Trustpower is quite happy to take its, if it must, take its chances in a merits-based argument under the new plan, but it's seeking a longer term for different reasons.
Okay, thank you.
Even in circumstances, I'm back at 39, even in circumstances where plans are outdated, incomplete or invalid, the RMA does not contemplate decision making being paused, nor does the MPS FM. And planning, and it's one of the challenges and good aspects of planning, it's always operate in a state of flux. The notified version of Plan Change 7 is, in my submission, a blunt instrument which adopts a one-size-must-fit-all approach, with the same framework applying to all takes and uses, whether it's subject to other national direction or other planning legislation direction, or where it sits in the MPSFM hierarchy. I submit that the approach represented by PC7 as notified is the antithesis of the MPSREG, the renewable electricity generation provisions in the RPS and Section 7J. It also does not reflect the MPSFM's hierarchy and other electricity generation provisions. So, why should hydro be treated differently? Mr Mitchell sets out in his evidence the reasons why, from a hydrological perspective, the notified Plan Change 7 provisions, including Schedule 10A4, are fundamentally inappropriate for hydro. There appears consensus in the 7 May JWS that there are material differences between hydro takes and other takes, and that therefore different methodologies for data analysis and associated limit setting are needed in Plan Change 7. Now, probably in a sidestep that Richie Monga would be proud of, Mum, instead of developing that schedule or bespoke schedule for hydro, the approach of the witnesses has been to develop the recommended provisions for the analysis of data and associated limits through the RDA process which Trustpower supports. As I say, that includes that RDA pathway that will be available to Trustpower, whereby water data can be assessed on the case-by-case basis. And that's where Trustpower really sees value through that joint witness process, as at least a pathway where it can be developed and worked through with the processing officers and the decision makers. So Trustpower has supported that and has supported changes to the schedule. But I think it'd be fair to say, without the RDA pathway, it would still have issues for hydro with the schedule. The various JWSs now evidence a high level of agreement that a different treatment for hydro is required under the Plan Change 7. And, Mum, I don't intend... I framed it when I drafted these submissions, taking the court through Mr Mitchell's evidence, but it is just really can only be a reinstatement of his evidence, and I don't think that's probably particularly helpful to read, unless you disagree, but I've tried to frame it in paragraphs 4 to A through to, I think it is, E. But they're the reasons for Trustpower's concerns around the schedule. I'm happy to read?
No, no, it's okay. Because we've read his evidence.
Yes.
Yep, all right.
I would just note in 4.2c that changes in take volumes can materially impact the operation and efficiencies of the scheme, and this is particularly so for Trustpower for these water races, these four water races, which are used up to five different power stations. The Black Rock race delivers water into power just above Power Station B at Deep Stream, and from there it flows to Lake Mahinerangi, which is the storage battery, and for use in four Waipori River schemes. So these water takes, Mum, while they're small from a hydro perspective in terms of the take, they're very, very efficient because of the ability to reuse the same water and take benefit of the location of these races in the high country and therefore the energy delivered through that head to the lower power stations. So, Mum, I will just lead from Ms Foran confirmation as to the relative efficiency of these four races. where am I now? I think I'm at 4.3, Mum.
Oh, yeah, you didn't mention F, but anyway, F is also a summary of your witness's evidence, isn't it? That'll be
great. Well, yeah, F is just a matter of practicality, that if, as Plan Change 7 was notified, and Mumla, if we're being honest, the schedule wasn't drafted with hydro in mind. It was entitled, as it related to, in the title, to irrigation. That's now been deleted, and I think we've just been trying to ham fit hydro into the schedule without making too many changes, but it's largely ill-suited. And one of the problems is that if Trustpower, which is an opportunistic user of water, it uses it when it's available, if it hit one of those monthly limits, then to get to Beaumont to manually shut the gates requires a two-hour journey up into the high country, and if it's snowing, by way of a Polaris. And we just raised that as, or the evidence has raised that, Mr Mitchell's raised that, as a matter of just the real-world consequence of some of these planning provisions.
Okay.
Overall, Plan Change 7, as notified, would have the effect of reducing the total authorised takes compared to the current maximum consented takes. For Trustpower, this is likely to reduce its long-term yield of each of the four water races. This, coupled with the short-term replacement durations required by Plan Change 7 as notified, will, in my submission, inappropriately reduce available takes for generation purposes. It will decrease generation, diminish the value of the investment. It is intended to disincentivise investment, and that will have the consequence in regard to maintenance and enhancements. Will create major uncertainty regarding the future availability of water and the risks associated with future consent replacements in 6 years' time, which I think you probably heard during the Cromwell sitting, that creates additional uncertainties in consenting costs. Now, for Trustpower, it's likely that it would have to go through another two consenting processes to bring it in line just a few years apart with the Waipori scheme. And that, in my submission, promotes inefficient outcomes. There's no acknowledgement in PC7 as notified regarding the level of investment in hydro schemes. The Waipori scheme is an excess of $100 million scheme. PC7's application to new resource consents, that is the six-year consent duration maximum, will also create uncertainty and materially disincentivise investment in new generation schemes. That is a deliberate outcome of PC7. As Ms. Foran notes, or as she confirms, PC7 will create considerable uncertainty with respect to investment decisions, both for any new development and maintenance of existing schemes, and it may put the enhancements in jeopardy. At 4.6, I submit that there may be very good reasons why consent duration of 6 years is not appropriate, which has been highlighted by several witnesses. For example, in the case of Trustpower's deemed permits, that 17-year term would allow the replacement consents to align with the expiry consents associated with the wider scheme and thus better enable the integrated management of the entire Waipori scheme. Now, Mark, the decision-maker hearing those applications, he or she, well, they may disagree with that, but at least Trustpower is seeking through this process that merits-based argument before the decision-maker. And, Mum, at 4.7, there's nothing you can do about this, but I just noted that Trustpower is also concerned with the six-year duration applying to new consents, so not the deemed permits, but new consents. It's concerned that such an approach may be adopted by other regional councils throughout the country who face the similar challenges of ORC in needing to process new and replacement water take applications while giving effect to the MPSFM and working through its implementation requirements. I don't think you can, well, I'm not asking you to take that submission any further, but I think that may be a consequence of policy. Was it 10A22? ORC's position? In his evidence in chief, Mr. Pelsmaker states, there may be other reasons than those set out in the submissions that justify further amending the provisions of Plan Change 7 to better accommodate the needs of hydro electricity generation, but I'd like to hear from the relevant submitters on this before making any further recommendations. In his reply evidence, Mr. DePalsmaker provides three reasons why he considers that exempting hydro activities altogether from Plan Change 7 is not appropriate. And I would just say, Mum, Trustpower's not seeking to be exempt altogether. These are restated by Mr. Moore in his opening submission. Firstly, Mr. DePalsmaker states that hydro schemes can involve a variety of activities, some of which may have significant hydrological and ecological effects. The AEs for all of Trustpower's deemed permit applications confirm that all adverse effects will be minor at worst. Secondly, Mr. DePalsmaker states that it's necessary to take a longer-term perspective on the impacts of climate change on freshwater bodies. The irony of this statement's not lost on Trustpower. Hydro schemes are long-term assets and will play a fundamental role in addressing climate change management and adaption. Thirdly, Mr. DePalsmaker states that there is a need to ensure that hydro schemes will make the transition towards the fresh management regime under the future LWRP in a timely manner. As I've outlined above, providing for hydro activities in a manner sought by Trustpower can be consistent with both MPSs and the concept of Te Mana o Te Wai. There's no reason why, in my submission, PC7 relief sought by Trustpower should be at odds with the LWRP. With respect to Trustpower's proposed Rule 10A32, which provides for replacement consents for hydro of more than a six-year activity as a discretionary activity, that's the relief Trustpower is still sticking with, Trustpower has not sought to restrict the consent authority's discretion, conditions that could be imposed, or remove the ability to even decline consent. Trustpower's consent applications seek terms to 2038, less than half the 35-year maximum under the RMA. And if necessary, the Regional Council may review those consents under 128 if that is of concern. Mr. the Pulsemaker also acknowledged that further relief for hydroelectricity generation within the PC7 framework may be appropriate if it were to be demonstrated that the application of Schedule 10A4 would significantly impact on the continued operation and viability of HEG schemes. It's entirely unclear where Mr. Pulsemaker required triggers of significant impact on the continued operation and viability of HEG schemes, or where that comes from. Mr. Pulsemaker confirmed in response to questions that there is no statutory planning basis for that important qualification. Mr. Moore, who in his opening submissions reaffirms the requirement for significant impacts on scheme viability, similarly has not explained any planning or legal basis for it. In my submission, there's nothing in the MPS-REG or the MPS-FM, for that matter, that indicates the requirement to give effect to the MPS-REG only in such limited circumstances. In fact, the MPS-REG confirms the opposite. Even minor reductions in electricity generation of existing schemes can cumulatively have significant adverse effects on national, regional and local renewable electricity generation. Ma'am, I then come to the issue of reviews that have been spoken a bit, I think probably around the Easter period.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do set out some submissions in that respect. I'm not sure if I need to take you through that, but I would just note the High Court in New Zealand Wind Farms and Palmerston North City Council, when it was reviewing the 128 provision and those processes, noted it's no mere tinkering exercise. The provisions in the RMA covering public notification, submissions and hearings in respect of resource consents all apply with respect to a review under 128. There is, therefore, very public correction process and reconsideration of the appropriate consent conditions. almost there, Ma.
Mm-hmm.
Consumptive versus non-consumptive. Ms Stiles, in her evidence, states that it is generally understood that hydroelectricity generation schemes return water to the environment in a way that can be utilised again by others or within a water body and thus are non-consumptive in the same sense as activities. Are not non-consumptive in the same sense as activities such as irrigation. By way of clarification, the relief sought by Trustpower is not dependent on affected takes being non-consumptive as defined under the Resource Management Measurement and Reporting Water Takes Regs. It's a very narrow definition, which is for the purpose of those regs is to require metering, so it should apply as widely as it does. And the Water Plan, Ma'am, its definition simply adopts that under the regulations. But Ms Stiles, in her evidence, notes that the Water Plan does treat in other parts of the document hydro along with other non-consumptive takes. Halfway through that paragraph, the MPS-REG applies to all takes for renewable electricity generation purposes and does not differentiate between consumptive and non-consumptive, including as defined under the water plans and those regulations. The takes are non-consumptive in the wider meaning of the word insofar as the water used is not lost to the wider hydrological system. And that is a fundamental difference between hydro, where the water is available still for the river or the lake or other users, as compared to irrigation where the water is lost to the land. Section 5, changes sought by Trustpower are appropriate. As Ms Stiles states in her evidence, to give effect to the higher order documents, PC7 needs to appropriately enable
the replacement of resource consents for existing hydro in the region, including deemed permits and new consent applications for enhancement or maintenance of existing schemes. And so, Mum, I just set out in 5.2 what Trustpower's actual position is. So Trustpower is seeking the wording proposed in plan change, in the 7 May JWS version, and I should say that's Objective A, because the witnesses or the experts came back with two versions of the objective for you.
You prefer A?
Yeah, A. Plus objective policy and rule amendments to provide an appropriate framework for hydro to be granted on a case-by-case basis for consent term longer than the six-year maximum duration. And those aren't new changes, Mum. That's what we've been seeking throughout. Ms. Stiles' evidence is that this is an efficient and the most appropriate way to provide for hydro and a give effect to those higher order documents. The framework will protect the efficient, flexible and sustainable renewable generation on which the nation's climate change commitments depend, while giving effect to mana to O2I as far as practical at this time. The focus provisions sought by Trustpower will not provide for some kind of free-for-all for hydro applicants. Mum, I don't think you've received any evidence thus far, beyond me at the from the bar, that the only water take from deemed permits is held for hydro is held by Trustpower, and it's these seven permits that it's seeking. There's Pioneer.
Yeah.
Its submissions refers only to the damming consent. Is it Falls Dam?
Oh, they've got assets all over the show. Yep, they've got other assets from other larger schemes, and I can't remember now whether it's Manaburn, Coolburn, Loganburn, whatever, you know.
But I think the reality is the number of hydro generating operators that rely on deemed permits is a limited class, at least.
Why are you telling me this, though? Why that point in particular?
Oh, I was just making the point that it's not going to open the flood, so to speak, the floodgates for all applicants to come in if there were a longer-term consent possibility for hydro operators. The class of operators that could try and seek that longer term is a limited one. That's all I say.
Okay.
Permits, though, is it?
No, it's
we're
not.
We're extending beyond thinking about deemed permits and the ones that expire in 25. Does that discretionary activity suggestion
well,
go
the,
that far? I just
well,
wanted to be clear well, the, on you the, to the have only, look at it.
The only scope under Plan Change 7, well, the only ambit of Plan Change 7 that applies to new applications that are not deemed permits or not replacements for applications that or for consents that expire by 2025. So the only provision is the policy direction on duration. None of the activity rules apply under Plan Change 7. They're still under the water plan at this stage. So new applications, Commissioner, will be subject to the policy on duration, and that's all under Plan Change 7.
So what you're suggesting is that it doesn't actually... Well, the only difference it makes is that the policy that's introduced in PC7 with the 6 years, that's the only difference that it makes?
For new applications, correct.
Yes, in terms of your proposition.
Well, the proposition there was relating, and probably shouldn't have put it in, the proposition there was only in respect that there wouldn't be a rush of people who are hydro operators seeking longer term consents for their replacement deemed permits. That's all.
Yes, well, I was just trying to understand how new propositions came into
only,
your provisions that you're suggesting, that's all.
They don't, is the answer. The only way they come in with the ambit of Plan Change 7 is through the policy direction. Trustpower has sought for hydro to expand that policy direction for new applications as well. So Trustpower is seeking that policy carve out for new hydro.
Yes. Well, that was what I was trying to understand. Yes. So you've confirmed my understanding of the proposition.
We've got there in the end on my part, yes. Ma'am, I don't need to take you through, but I was trying to find some safety in numbers in 5.5 in respect of...
So you've got some friends out there, haven't
you?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's felt otherwise at times, but just in terms of the acknowledgements by the planners in particular around dealing with a longer-term pathway for hydro. And I just set that out, including a reference back to Ms Dixon's submissions. So I won't read that to you in the interest of time, Mum. Mm-hmm. The only other matter, and I don't do anything with this, but I feel duty-bound just to raise it, and that's the, and I mentioned this...
You did.
The Dunedin City Corporation Empowering Act, which is an odd piece of legislation that's still on the statute box, and that was for the raising of the Waipuri Dam. It's not been repealed, and it provides for the mining privileges and water race licences held or later acquired by the corporation, who was the original developer of Waipuri, to continue in perpetuity. And I just include that act. It's about 3 pages, just in Annexure B. Now, that in my submission shows or demonstrates the importance Parliament at the time ascribed to the scheme, even a century ago. But I do note that Trustpower's not relied on that provision or the Empowering Act and has filed applications for replacement consents as if they were to expire or lapse on 1 October this year. So it's just background, really, Mum. So my principal submission is that the relief sought by Trustpower appropriately gives effect to all applicable higher order planning instruments. And in terms of Section 32, Ms Stiles' proposed objective is the most appropriate means of achieving the purpose of the Act, and the provisions proposed by Ms Stiles are the most appropriate way to achieve the proposed objective. Finally, PC7, as sought by Trustpower, will promote the sustainable management purpose of the Act. And thank you, Mum. Those are my submissions.
All right. Have you got any questions?
Oh, I was just wanting to be sure that I was clear about your 2.2. At the bottom of page 3.
What about it? Yeah.
Policy 2.2, sorry.
Paragraph 2.2. I just wanted to be clear about your 17-year consent durations.
Yeah.
For your all deemed permit replacement consents, and then you mentioned that those are going to align those replacement consents with the existing expiry dates of the wider Waipori and
deep stream. Yes.
So
in terms of the release,
in your application.
That's in the application.
You've applied for 17 years. Yes. Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean. And thank you for raising that, Commissioner, because it was a point I was meant to correct. Because I think the interchange between Your Honour and myself, at one point I indicated we were seeking relief of 17 years, and that was confusion on my part, and I apologise to the court and to my friends in that respect. The term sought in the resource consent applications is 17 years. We haven't tried to trust-powerise the provisions that much to have a 17-year term in Plan Change 7.
That's all right.
So I apologise, Mum, for that.
Right.
Not a problem.
And so those deemed permit replacement consents, do they contain any enhancement measures? Because I guess I might need to ask one of your witnesses about that.
Yeah.
But there was mention of one of these races enhancement takes and higher flows.
Yeah, well, that's the...
So at that point I wasn't clear. Quite what was envisaged here.
Okay, so there's two types of enhancements, so just to be clear. In terms of the deemed permits, they're at an early stage. They've been filed and they're on hold. And the applications are seeking a rollover of those provisions. Three of the four were filed before Plan Change 7 was notified. So they don't include any environmental enhancements beyond the status quo, but they've got a long way to go through the consenting process. The reference in the deep stream enhancement is an application currently sitting before ORC, which seeks to increase the take from deep stream in flood flows and to capture that. So for trust power, that's an enhancement, and in terms of renewable energy, it's an enhancement, but it's not an enhancement like plantings or so forth. So that's the reference there.
And so what term has that been applied for?
That's been applied for 17 years as well, and so it gets caught by that policy direction under Plan Change 7, but it sits outside of Plan Change 7 as a new water consent,
it's a new water permit.
So that's also consistently being tried to align to the deep stream.
Right. So the actual application then has the term
May.
That will align.
Yes.
With it, so that'll be 17
Correct.
Years as well.
That's what's been applied
sure.
for.
Sure. Look, yeah. Thanks. That clarifies the position. I won't have to ask your witness now.
Thank you.
Hopefully.
So is the general thinking for trust power that if it were to be seeking six-year consents, it would go via an RDA route because there needs to be further work in relation to the schedule. If it's seeking more than 6 years consents, it would go via a fully discretionary route.
Correct.
So I've got it?
Yes.
You're not anticipating ever going controlled, for example.
Well, we can't make controlled. And
I
think to make controlled required
yeah.
a lot of changes that,
yeah.
quite frankly, a lot of the experts, as I understand, just weren't interested because they're not. It's hydro.
Yeah.
So it was resulting in too many changes, and that would make the schedule,
okay.
in my submission, more complex,
mm-hmm.
not less, because it would have double up of provisions.
Yeah. Well, we thought you might actually need another schedule for hydro,
well,
another schedule for
they
community.
They didn't deliver me
we
another
schedule. We did actually
schedule.
Put that out
yeah.
there, but that's okay. No?
That's not what came back from
yep.
the joint witness, and
yep.
I'm on the outside of that process,
yep.
ma'am.
As are we?
Yeah.
Yep. Very good. Okay.
So that's why I say that the RDA deals with the schedule. If
yep.
we don't have the RDA, we've got some problems.
Yeah. No, understood.
But we'll probably, if trespass seeks a six-year consent, be bumped up to discretionary.
Okay. All right, well,
thank you, ma'am.
That was my question. So we'll take the break before going to your next witness.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All rise.